I have been thinking about making this tape for quite a while, but I really don't know where to start. So if you'll excuse me, I'll just ramble around for a little while until I can get into what I really want to say. I have chosen this method to communicate with you since it isn't possible for me to spend time with each of you individually, which is what I'd really enjoy doing. All of you are very important to me, and each of you hold a special place in my heart. My heart is filled overflowing with pride, with joy, and with love. I find it very hard at times to really express my feelings and tell you how much you mean to me. I'd like to give you just a little background of my life, and maybe it will help you understand where I'm coming from. I'm sure all of you know I was born and raised on a cattle ranch in a small community. It was during the time of the Great Depression, which was followed by a very severe drought in our area, and then followed by World War II. I didn't realize it as it happened, but we were very, very poor. But so was everyone else we knew and grew up with. I will spare you all of the details, except to say that we lived 6 miles out of town, we had no car, and about the only way we could go anywhere was on the school bus, or if some neighbor offered us a ride. We had a horse and wagon, and a buggy, but we didn't use them for social events or even to go for supplies. We had no telephone, so we had very little communication outside of our family. This was a big disadvantage to me and my sister. Our social life was quite limited. We could go to school on the bus, and when school was over, we went home on the bus. Primary was held on Tuesday after school. We could not attend. When there were birthday parties or school parties or other events, we had to go home on the bus and could not attend. The kids who lived in town or closer to town socialized together, and those who could not be there soon became social outcasts and excluded from any close friendship and from the group activity. We became the brunt of the jokes and the objects of ridicule. We did not attend church on Sunday, so we had no social contact with any of the kids there. My family was totally inactive. I was not baptized until I was 10 years old because I did not feel any closeness to the other kids my age, and when there was a group baptism held, I didn't want to go. 2 years later, my dad's older sister had a daughter who was going to be baptized. Aunt Ellen talked to my parents, and they finally agreed to have me and my sister Lois baptized when our cousin Nada was baptized. Now we were members of the church, but this did not have any effect on the teasings, the jokes, the pranks, nor the ridicule. To top all of this, I was extremely shy and very bashful. Even though all my cousins near my age were girls, and we visited each other quite frequently, I could not talk to a girl other than one of my cousins. If a girl came up to me and started to talk or ask me a question, I would stammer and stutter and blush and make a stupid fool of myself. And you can see that that hasn't changed much. I would go to school and overhear others talking about the parties and activities of the previous evening or on the weekend, and they would laugh about the games they played and the activities they were involved with. I would long to be a part of the group and the activity, and then I would be reminded that I didn't fit in the group and I was not a part of the social structure. Later, during World War II, the town of Randolph held a dance each time a new group of men were leaving for the service, and every time any of the servicemen were home on furlough. By this time, we did have a car, and our financial condition was a little improved, but not good by any means. And we would go to the dances. I could not ask a girl to dance with me. In the first place, I didn't know how to dance. I was clumsy and awkward and uncoordinated, and I would trip over my own feet. And in the second place, I still could not talk to a girl. My dad used to offer me 25 cents for every girl I danced with other than my sister or my cousins. Those were the most difficult quarters I ever earned. Many of the dances I received nothing. Others I may have acquired 25 or 50 cents. I had no dates before I graduated from high school. A friend of mine tried to help and did arrange dates for me a couple of times. I would be very excited until I went to pick up the young lady. Then when I got to the door, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. I stammered and stuttered and finally got her to the car. My friend and his date were there, and they could talk with my date, and I could relax until we got where we were going. Things would go pretty well until it was time to go home. I would hold the car door open so she could get out of the car. Then I had to walk her to the door, say something nice, and tell her good night. What a miserable night she had already had, and now this clod who had both feet in his mouth was trying to tell her thanks for a beautiful evening. She certainly hoped he wasn't going to try to kiss her goodnight. Well, she didn't have to worry about that. I didn't even have enough courage to hold her hand. It took a long time and 2 or 3 years of college before I reached a point I could relax and talk with a girl. There were times in high school when someone or other would tell me that some girl really liked me. Since I had been burned so many times by the pranks and jokes over the years, I paid no attention. At one point, even my dad tried to point out to me that a certain girl in town would give her left arm if I would take her out. I didn't pay any attention because the girl was older than me. And in our town, older girls do not pay any attention to younger boys. Anyway, she was very pretty, a blonde girl. She was very popular. She dressed very nicely. She was an excellent dancer. She was smooth and graceful. She had everything, and I had nothing. I was awkward. I was clumsy. There was nothing about me one would consider appealing. I was not an athletic type. I didn't have any nice clothes. I didn't have access to a car. I had no money to pay for nice dates. I had none of the things which I felt were absolute necessities before a girl would have any interest in a boy. I never participated in athletics. My father forbid me to even take physical education at school. He argued with the Board of Education and the school principal and the superintendent. They finally agreed to let me have physical education credit so I could graduate if I would oversee the 9th and 10th grade boys during their physical education class, and if I would play on the touch football team for 6 weeks. I did, but that was the extent of my athletic career. True, I could clean a stable and haul the fertilizer out and spread it on the meadow as well as anyone. I could load a rack with hay, haul it to the cows or sheep, and unload it in long rows for them to eat, and do it as fast or faster than any of the boys my age. I could wade canals and clear out rubbish dams, or I could walk the banks of irrigation ditches and find and stop leaks right along with the best of them. I could repair or build barbed wire fences with skill and with as few scratches as anyone else. I could stack hay into 20-ton stacks without them tipping over, but I did not have the skills I needed to be popular with the young ladies. It was a standard practice for the high school to present a school play each year, and the whole county was invited to attend. The high school consisted of students living in half of the county. I had some desire to be in one of those plays and hoped they would ask me sometime before I graduated. In my junior year, I was asked to be in the play. I was very, very happy. I don't remember the name of the play or very much of what it was about, except that it centered around a group of college students and their social life. Of course, college students are most frequently seen in pairs, boy and girl. I was cast to be the boyfriend of the very pretty blonde girl my dad had said was interested in me. Pure coincidence, I thought. I rehearsed with her for several weeks and even got to the point I could talk with her as long as the subject was something about the play. It never entered my head this gorgeous thing did have some interest in me, and everybody in town knew it but me. Even the school teachers knew what I needed, and they tried to wake me up and make me see what was going on. It didn't work. I was married and raising a family before the light came on, and I could see how the girl had tried to get close to me. Oh, well. Randolph was a town of about 600 people, and about 597 of them were members of the church. Half of them seldom attended church, but most of the activities centered around the church. Even if it was a town activity or a school activity, it was normally held in the church recreation hall. We now call them cultural halls. The recreation hall was a separate building across the street from the chapel, and the town held a weekly movie there. All the dances were held there. School plays, school basketball games, church basketball games, wedding receptions, family reunions were all held in the recreation hall. While I was growing up, the church held little meaning to me. We seldom attended. However, after I went to college, I started to get a feeling I wanted to be a part of it. A few of the fellows who lived in the same dorm as I was in were active and attended church regularly. It took a couple of years, but I finally got started on a more or less regular basis. Then one evening I went to a church fireside. A young man stood up before the group and very quietly asked four questions. 1. Who am I? 2. Where did I come from? 3. What am I doing here? 4. Where am I going? For some reason, these questions hit me like a load of bricks. Nothing like this had ever crossed my mind before. I sat there as if I were hypnotized while the Lord's plan of salvation was explained to me and to the others in attendance. I was fascinated. This experience started a whole new way of thinking and helped me realize there is a purpose for our being here on earth. From that time, I became much more serious about church attendance and about what my life needed to be. It was a slow process, but as time went on, many of my questions were answered. I began to realize I had a testimony of the gospel of Jesus Christ. That testimony grew with various experiences I had in life, some spiritual, some not spiritual. Each experience helped me appreciate more what I had and how valuable it is. Since I retired from my employment, I had an experience I would like to tell you. After we moved to Arizona, I would go to shopping malls to walk. Since my health depends quite heavily on a need for me to walk at least 3 miles per day, I made daily trips to one mall or another. It is not uncommon to find senior citizens wandering around, sitting around, or gathered in small groups visiting. One day, as I finished my walk and was about to leave, I saw a man sitting alone on a bench near a door. I would normally nod or speak as I passed by and then go on my way. For some reason, I stopped and chatted with him for a minute. He invited me to sit down and visit for a while, and he started to tell me a little about himself. I followed with a brief summary of my life. I don't know how it happened, but we were talking about religion. He said he did not have any religion and couldn't believe there could be a God. I told him I know there is a God. He promptly asked me that if I know there is a God, have I ever talked to him? I told him I talked to him every day in my prayers. He scoffed and asked if I ever heard him. Had he ever talked to me? Again, I told him that he has. I've heard him in the messages from the leaders of the church. I have heard him in sermons delivered in church by humble and inspired speakers who are teaching by the Spirit. I have heard him through great, quiet whisperings of the Spirit which penetrate the heart and fill the mind. I have heard him in Scripture as I read them and ponder their meaning. Then he asked if I had ever smelled God or if I had ever touched God. To these questions I had to give him a negative answer. Then he brought out the final of the five senses. Have I ever seen God? I told him that I have never stood face to face with God and looked him in the eye, but I have seen God. I have seen him every day. I see him when I look at a mountain and realize how it gained its majesty and strength. I see him in the forest as I see the trees and how they grow. I see him in the fields as I see grain or other crops growing and maturing. I see him in the rivers and the streams as they carry water to moisten the earth, to provide power for the use of mankind, to give drink to animals and man. I see him in the works of dedicated people who use their time and energy for the service and well-being of others. I see him in the eyes and faces of small children who are innocent of the ways of men of the world and who have so recently left the presence of God to dwell on the earth. I see him in the sunrise, in the sunset, in the stars and the planets of the universe, in the solar system and the placing of the earth in relationship to the sun, not too far away so everything would be frozen, and not too close where nothing could survive the heat. I see him in the army of missionaries who are willing to leave their homes, their families, their careers, to teach the world the message of the gospel. I see him in the peace that comes to the troubled heart of one who has accepted the gospel and changed his or her life. I see him everywhere I turn. There is nothing around me which does not remind me that everything is God's, and that the people are here as stewards to use and take care of God's possessions. The man became very quiet and very somber. He finally said what I had told him sounded very good, but he couldn't believe that way. Then he got up and walked away. I do have a testimony of the gospel. I know it has been restored to earth through a prophet called by God in these latter days. I know there is a prophet serving as president of the church today. Gordon B. Hinckley has been prepared throughout his life to receive the mantle of president and prophet. He is the mouthpiece of the Lord and delivers the word of the Lord to his people here on earth. I know Jesus lives and that he is our Savior and Redeemer. He is the Lord of this earth. The gospel is his. He stands at the head of his church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I am so very grateful to the Lord for his mission here on the earth. It has taken me a long time to gain even a small comprehension of the sacrifice and his suffering to atone for the sins of mankind. I know I can't even imagine all of the pain and suffering he went through for us, but I can now more fully appreciate the gift he has given us. First, he gave us resurrection. Everyone will be resurrected and receive their body again. What a glorious experience this will be. Our body will be restored without imperfections, without handicaps, without blemishes. It will age no more. It will be immortal. It will never die. But even more exciting is the atonement. He knew that all of us would make mistakes in our lives. In fact, we were all sent here to earth to make choices. When we make a choice, we are going to make mistakes. We learn from the mistakes we make. Some mistakes may be small, and we can correct them with his help through prayer and with good works. Other mistakes may be larger, and we can't correct them ourselves. He has provided a way. He has taken upon himself all the sins of the world and atoned for them so we can continue our eternal growth and progress. Yes, we have some responsibility, and we have some steps to take, but we can overcome the errors we make. We do need to recognize the mistake we've made. We need to be sorry for having made the mistake. We need to do what we can to make good any loss to others our mistake may have caused. And we need to decide within ourselves to try not to make that mistake again. By acknowledging before God in prayer that we have been wrong, and by asking for his forgiveness, we can be forgiven. For the Lord has told us that even if the sin be as scarlet, it can be white as snow. I have found that he is very loving and very forgiving. Sometimes he directs us to one of his servants here on earth to help us gain the strength we need to overcome a weakness or to right a wrong. But many times it can be worked out by faith and trust in the Lord, praying, reading and studying the scriptures, by changing our way of life, and by actively participating in the programs of his church. How great is the joy in my heart to learn this principle and to know we are not expected to be perfect here. We are going to make mistakes. Seldom a day will go by when we do not make a mistake of some kind. But the peace which comes when we know that God is there to help, to encourage, to strengthen, and to comfort each of us if we will give Him a chance. Sorry for the break right here. I had to stop for a few minutes and untwist my tongue before I could go on. As you can tell from the noises, I have written this down and I am reading it. And this is because I wanted to deliver it a little more smoothly, without long delays like I normally would do when I'm taping. Well, to go on. I've lost my place. Hang on a minute. Okay, here it is. I am proud of my family, and I have great love and respect for every member of it. This includes, and rightly it should, those beautiful spirits who have joined us by choice through marriage. If I could have handpicked daughters for my family, I would not have done as well as my sons have done. Even though some of the marriages have not worked out, I still have much love and respect for those wonderful daughters of our Father in Heaven. As I think of my family, and I frequently do, I realize how blessed I am. I think of each one individually and think of all the talents each has, the potential of each, the accomplishments already made, the future for each. My heart is filled. I love each one so very much. I think of the sacrifices each has made and the sacrifice each of you is continuing to make. I see your strengths and I see your aspirations. I see all of you make some choices I wouldn't make, and I respect you for making the choice. I watch you work your way through hard choices and then back out of bad choices, and I pray for God's help for each of you to make it through each day in your day-to-day struggles. I pray for the Spirit of the Lord to be with each member of my family, that they may be successful in their efforts, that they may be protected from harm and danger, that they may have the strength to carry the burdens placed on their shoulders, that they might have the wisdom they need to make wise choices and set the right example for others around them. I pray that each would think of the blessings they have received from the Lord, and that they may be willing to accept the Lord's plan and include it in their daily lives. I could not feel comfortable if I tried to go my own way and not try to do things the way I have been taught and to recognize the hand of God in all the blessings I receive every day. I really don't mean to preach, but I do want every member of my family to know that I love God and I love His only begotten Son in the flesh, Jesus Christ. I am very grateful for the atonement and the resurrection, and most of all, I am so grateful that when I make mistakes, I still have a chance to inherit a place in the kingdom of God where I can be near Him. What hope and peace this brings to the heart of an imperfect man who wants to serve God to the best of his ability all the remaining days of his life. Through the years, I have tried to live as I was taught. Even though my father and his brothers were not actively involved in church or religious activities, their lives reflected the teachings of God. They were honest. They worked very hard. They were never looking for a handout, and they would be the first in line to give anything they had to anyone who needed it more than they did. If any neighbor or friend became sick or was injured, they would leave their own crops or work they were doing and go to the aid of the neighbor. When the neighbor's crops or work were done, they would go back to see what they could salvage of their own. They would not take anything which did not belong to them and would spend hours and even days to find the rightful owner. They were nearly always the first one on the job and the last to leave. They believed in giving a full day's work for their pay. On more than one occasion, I have been told of a certain rancher who wanted to hire some extra help. As I was told, He had said he would rather hire Henry and Lavere Nichols than any other 10 men he knew. That is a tough reputation to live up to. Perhaps one more experience should be shared with you. In our little town, there was a general store. Everyone in town traded there. Because of the depression and drought, money was very scarce, and ranchers frequently brought in eggs or chicken or produce or whatever they may have had to trade for items they needed. Basically, income for the ranchers came twice a year. In the spring of the year, sheep were sheared and the wool was sold. In the fall, lambs and steers were sold. Very frequently, the money was exhausted before the next income was to be received. As a result, the general store carried a very large number of people who needed credit and wanted to charge their purchases until their next income was received. I went to town with my father one day. He needed repair parts for some farm machinery which had broken down. He had no money and knew he would need to charge his purchase. This would be until his fall income was received. In those days, the clerk in the store found each item you wished to buy and wrote it up for you. If there were others in the store before you, you waited until all their order was filled and written up before you could be waited on. One person in the store ahead of us was a rancher we knew well and considered him to be a well-respected neighbor. He had a nicer home than we had. He had a newer car than we had. He was a leader in the community and in the church. As we walked around inside the store waiting for our turn, we heard the store owner tell our neighbor he could not extend any more credit. The amount of credit already extended was far greater than the store could handle. The neighbor left, and the store owner came over to Dad to see what he needed. My father said he guessed he would have to get along as he had no money. He had just heard what our neighbor was told. The store owner took my father by the hand, shook it, and said, "Henry, you can have anything and everything in this store on credit. You pay your bills." I have tried to follow this pattern in my life and to set an example for my family to follow. I have not been as successful as my father was, but I have a great appreciation for the principle of work. I have often said I am not afraid of work. I can lay down right beside it and go to sleep. But I can tell you, I sleep much better if I have filled my day with work. I have watched my family through the years, and I am very proud to say that my sons know how to work. They don't all have the same talents. They don't all have the same interests. They don't all have the same training or experience. But they do know how to work, and they work hard at the job they are doing. I worry at times when I see one or another lose his job, but it usually isn't long until he has another. At times I wish I could tuck them under my wing and protect them from some of the problems and troubles life deals out to them. But I can't, and I shouldn't. They need these challenges to help them gain experience, develop their talents, and get the strength they need to face the next test life throws at them. What great joy fills my heart as I see them succeed. Well, it looks like we're coming to the end of this tape, so I guess we will need to fast forward it and continue on the other side. Any of you who thought you could be through with this boring tape and not have to listen anymore, we'll have another thing coming. I have lots more, so just fast forward to the end of the tape, turn it over, and we'll go on. Okay, I'm ready again, so let's get on with this. Life is not easy, and it is becoming more challenging day by day. I did not have to face half as many problems in life as my sons have had to face. I don't think I've had to face one-tenth of the challenges my grandchildren are facing today. I often feel that if I had to grow up in today's world, I probably would never have made it. The young people I know today are very special and highly intelligent. I realize there are many in our society who don't seem to measure up to that intelligent bit because of the choices they make and the things they do. It is very sad that most of these young people are the product of homes where the parents have failed. Fortunately, however, thousands and thousands of the youth today have brilliant minds, great strength, much courage, and a desire to learn and to do the things which will make a better world for everyone. I have great hope for the future of my grandchildren because I can see their potential and their strength of character. I can see determination. I can see wisdom. I can see faith in themselves and faith in God. They are not being taken in by the false ideals of those who are trying to destroy all that is good and of great worth. They stand up for their convictions and they do not bend to the pressures of peers and popular groups throughout the entertainment world. They are looking for ways to improve life and to share good with others. I am so very proud of my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. I love each one from the bottom of my heart. They are each so very special in their own way. I only wish I had the ability to express the feelings of my heart and the tremendous pride I feel for my greatest blessings, my family. Whether it be a 23-year-old handsome young man or a 2-year-old beautiful little girl, it makes no difference. Each is as precious to me as the other. No person has been blessed more than I have with such dynamic young men and young women to carry on the work needed to make the world a better and a safer place in which to live and work. What a tremendous challenge they have before them. What a great work is there for them to perform. I have no fear. I have every confidence that each of you are equal to the task and that all of you will be successful in doing what needs to be done. If I may offer any suggestion or give any advice, it would be that if you will keep the Lord first and foremost in your mind and live your life in accordance with His plan and direction, you will be successful in all your endeavors. Forget men's way. Ignore the world's way. Do it God's way, and you will not fail. I know I could not have gotten as far as I am today without the help of God. I would not be able to enjoy the comforts and luxuries which surround me without the help of the Lord. I would not be able to enjoy the opportunity of my lifetime to microfilm records in a foreign land. And if I had not tried to stay close to the Lord, I know that this would not have taken place. I know He lives. I know He hears and answers prayers. I know He is mindful of each of us and that He loves us. We are His sons and daughters, and He has sent us here to have experiences, and He has given us our agency so we can choose to follow Him or to follow the ways of Satan. He will not force us or push us. He wants all of us to return to His presence when our journey on earth is finished. That is why He made sure there was a way to get back to Him even when we make mistakes in our choices and our conduct. He has provided directions for us by giving us scriptures to read. He has provided help in the form of prophets to lead us and to teach us how to understand the scriptures and to give us further instruction and direction from our Father as He sends it to us. His plan is beautiful and complete. The weaknesses and frailties of human beings are the greatest stumbling blocks along the way. Too many of us get the idea we can do it or we are doing it all by ourselves, and we fail to give God the credit for the accomplishments made. We forget to recognize the fact that God gave us the talent needed. He made the materials available to us. He placed us in such an environment we could learn what we needed to accomplish what needs to be done. He gave us the wisdom, the inspiration, and the energy to perform the accomplished action. He gave us the agency to choose what we want to do. Without God's help, we are of small consequence. The earth is the Lord's and all things in and on it. We are given the right to live here and to use the things He provided. However, we must never forget that we are stewards and that we must report back to Him the things we have done with the tools and materials He provided. Now, aren't you glad I have a hard time expressing my deepest feelings and that I find it difficult to talk to people especially girls. Just think, if I didn't have this problem, I could just go on and on and on and never run out of things to say. Many times I have had feelings of love or pride or gratitude inside, and I wanted so much to express them to one or more of you, but I have choked up and couldn't get the words out. I know I am a sentimental old coot, and I get very emotional about these precious things. There are times when the feelings of love, pride, gratitude, praise well up within me and then just spill over my eyelids and won't come out as words. The tears are not from sadness, but rather from happiness and joy. They embarrass me at times because I was brought up in a day and age where it was very unmanly to cry. In fact, society in those days looked down on any man who exhibited any sign of such weakness. Only sissies and babies cried or showed tears even without evidence of crying. Most of you know I have a very low pain tolerance, and as I was growing up, it didn't take a very hard blow to bring me to tears. This was used frequently by the other boys at school and was a source of their amusement. Because I was not permitted to be involved in any sports or athletic activity, because I was forbidden to fight, life at times was quite unbearable. My father always warned me that if I got into any fights at school, I would really get into one when I got home. All of the kids at school knew the warning, so I was fair game. Believe me, it was not easy. I wanted to be obedient to my parents, and I had no desires to fight. I also was under the impression my father would follow through on his warning if I disobeyed. My father was not a big man, 5 feet 8 inches tall, 165 pounds. But I have seen my father wrestle a 1,400-pound horse to the ground and hold it. I have seen him throw cows and steers around and roll them over on their backs. I have seen him pick up objects and carry them when I couldn't even move them. My father died when he was 61 years of age. I would not have physically challenged my father at any time, even up to the day of his death. Afraid of him, you say? Possibly. But also I respected him. I was taught to respect my parents and all people older than me. It is sad to see society today and find so little respect for anything or anyone. How happy I am to witness the respect my children and my grandchildren have for me. I am so very grateful for their love and concern for me. I want you to know I appreciate it and love each of you even more because of it. I just went back and listened to what I've been saying to you. I really am feeling sorry for myself, and I am begging for sympathy. This is not the message I wanted to give you. I just hoped I could give you a little picture of why I am the way I am, and maybe you can understand why I do and say some of the dumb things I do. I am really very happy and very excited at the opportunity to serve as a microfilmer, and I'm very happy with my family and loved ones. I am sorry I can't be with you for a few months, and I will miss you very much. When I get finished and return home, I probably won't recognize some of you. Even though it's only 18 to 24 months, changes will take place. My love for you will not change, and I hope your respect for me will still be strong. I expect there could be some grandsons-in-law and granddaughters-in-law added to the family during that time. There could even be great-grandchildren added, and then the possibility of daughters-in-law are not out of reach. So I expect some changes can be made in the family structure. At any rate, whatever the changes may be, my love can only grow as time and distance keep us apart. Since I'm not going to be close by for a while, I want to wish you a happy birthday a couple of times, and a Merry Christmas twice. I won't be here to tell you personally. Please take good care of yourself. I want you here to greet me when I return. May God's choicest blessings be yours. May He watch over you, protect you, guide you, strengthen you, and love you all your days. And may you feel the power and strength of His Spirit around you as you strive to meet the challenges and overcome the obstacles before you in your day-to-day effort to survive and succeed in today's world. Thank you for taking time to listen to an old man's ramblings. If I were witty and entertaining, I could have added some levity so this would not be so monotonous. I could have sprinkled it with humor to make it more interesting. I could have included more embarrassing experiences to spice it up. But since I am what I am, and I refuse to go into that, I have given you the message to enrich your mind and bless your life. I love you.